Blog Talk Radio.
Archangels, ghosts, and Bigfoot, oh my. It's just another night for Supernatural Girls. Real stories, real answers to life's biggest supernatural mysteries. And now, for another exciting interview with paranormal experts from this world and others, here's your host, paranormal researcher Patricia Baker, on the one, the only, Supernatural Girls.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of Supernatural Girls Radio. I'm your host, Patricia Baker, and I'm here with my co-host, Patricia Kirkman. PK, how are you?
Absolutely fabulous. What in the world could go wrong? There was sunshine today, and we don't have snow here.
Wow, this is all sounding good to me.
Yeah, I figured you might. That would be a good teaser for you.
It is. It is indeed. I like hearing that. Oh, my. Well, we don't have any snow either, which is kind of odd for this time of year for us here in New England, but I'm not complaining. I kind of like that.
No. I'm looking at some of the things happening in the Midwest and on the east, lower eastern coast. My God. Woo.
Yeah.
I don't
They're getting hammered.
They certainly
They are getting hammered. It's, yeah, a lot of snow flying out there. So we've had another very strange week, I would say. Lots of things flying around, and you just don't know where to turn. And one of our predictors, I believe it was William Stickever, said that it would be like our heads were on a swivel, where we just didn't know where to look next. I think he was absolutely right about that, huh?
Not a doubt in my mind. Not
and
a doubt
Maria,
in my mind.
Yeah, now she's going to be joining us in a couple of weeks. And Maria said that we would be seeing things in this country that we thought we'd never, ever see. And she was right. So Maria is going to be coming back in a couple of weeks. And next week.
Not Maria Shaw, right?
Yeah, Maria Shaw. Right. She's coming back. Mm-hmm. And we are also going to be bringing in your friend, Jeff Harmon, who's also an astrologer. He's going to be talking about a chart he did on Jeffrey Epstein and, of course, what we can expect for 2021. So can't wait to hear from him next week. So
well,
that'll be terrific.
He's a Vedic astrologer, so his approach is going to be different and gives us the same kind of facts, but it comes out of a different direction and adds a little more balance to some of the things that we've thought about, which is always interesting to see.
It's my favorite form of astrology, actually. I find Vedic astrology to be super accurate, and I love their interpretation, so I can't wait to get him on the show next week. That is going to be terrific.
Well, when it comes to both astrologies, I very much enjoy them. I did work with our type of astrology, and I could still get lost in a round room, even though I've studied it on and off over the years. That's why
That's
I keep
funny.
Going back to my number simplification.
Well, I know you've been looking at the numbers to continue to advise us in all these crazy times. So what did you find when you were looking around for what we can expect this week?
Well, first, we have to remember foremost, this is a month that deals with family. Everybody wants it perfect. We're looking at things that deal with alternative, whether it be medicines or alternative ways of learning and things. But today's a day dealing with new beginnings. And I was thinking, didn't we have somebody have a talk today and a few other things ongoing that are talking about new beginnings, which I think is fabulous. But also, it's a new moon today.
Oh.
And the new moon is in Capricorn. So personal growth and healing rules could be broken or set up. But it is a very, very interesting time because this is a time you could write new moon wishes. Write them out, about 10, put your ideas and thoughts down, and put it aside, and later pull it out and see how well your intuitive side has worked with your new moon wishes. Because when we take a look at the Capricorn aspect of things, Capricorn deals with work, work-related issues. It deals with wanting things to be perfect in their own way, and it can create, well, let's put it this way. Capricorn rules business, career, and work issues. And boy, that's really one of the topics that's everywhere. It's all over the board. And there appears to be obstacles and challenges that are going to come our way with this new moon in Capricorn. So get your ducks in a row, folks, because we're going to have a Mercury retrograde start January 30th, and it will be in effect until February 20th.
Ew.
So what we can get ahead of time is certainly going to be to our betterment. There's no question about that.
Yeah, well, we definitely need to take a look, because Mercury makes us go, when it goes retrograde, makes us look at things, go back over them, more or less, right? So it's like a reevaluation.
Sure. Well, it gives us opportunity to redo, review, but that's also a time when different things break down, don't work properly, anything to do with electronics. And well, if we're taking a look at some of the things that are going on right now, have you noticed different parts of the world have been having blackouts?
Now, isn't that odd? What's going on?
Uh-huh. Well, I'm a little concerned about that, because first it was Vatican, and then the Middle East, and now they're talking about everybody kind of paying attention to what's going on. I don't think, are we using that much more electricity now that we're not getting out in certain countries? I don't think so.
Well, no, I think there is definitely something else going on. I heard there was a major blackout also in Iran and, let's see, Germany. There were a number of them. Now, somebody reported also a blackout in California, but it could have been just some domestic thing, a transformer or something that upset the grid. But, yeah, there's a lot going on, I think, and I'm feeling this a lot behind the scenes. We're just not going to hear about it for a little while. So that is
we'll hear about it
very unsettling, but, you know.
Oh, definitely. It makes you very suspect when you have so much going on at one time.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot flying. There's people that have their own opinions about everything, and there's a lot of unfortunate division and hatred that is being expressed, and that is not something that we want to support in any way whatsoever. I mean, but
no.
there is a lot happening, that is for sure. But tonight we're going to be able to talk about something really terrific. It's one of our favorite topics, and we have a great guest. His name is John Rhodes. We're going to bring him on in just a few minutes. He is the crypto hunter. I mean, we're going to talk to John about all of his UFO research and all of his information about UFOs, alien encounters, and secret government technologies. So tonight we're going to take a break from some of the madness that's flying on around us, and we're going to talk about this terrific topic. Yeah, we love these topics. This is what we're here to do. So before we go to that, I just want to, again, ask everybody to go to our Facebook page, like and follow us there. We're also on MeWe now, so you can find us there. And we're exploring other options, too, because we're not happy about censorship of anybody. It just doesn't feel right. So we're looking into other platforms. As we find them and we move to them, we'll be sure to let you know. I believe everybody should have the right to free speech. It's part of what we do in this country. So we'll see what we can find, and hopefully we'll have even better platforms where we can converse with you and continue to do what we do best, talking about the paranormal. And I do also want to share something about the Vatican that I found very interesting. I did post it on Facebook, but many years ago, I was very blessed to meet Dr. Andrea Puharic. She's a medical doctor, and he was foremost in the paranormal world and actually worked with the U.S. Navy on secret paranormal projects, beginning in 1944 with Project Penguin. And one thing that I talked to Andrea about, I talked to him about a lot of things. I really loved picking his brain. He was an absolute genius. And I asked him about the prophecies that were given to the little girls at Fatima And
right.
There were three prophecies, as you recall. That's how the story went, anyways. And they were all taken by the church. And I mean not your church down the street. I'm talking about the Vatican Church, the head of everything. And they just basically released two of them in their own time. They weren't released right away.
Nope, they held out on the third one.
Yeah, the third they never released. So
that's
I asked Andrea, I said, what's the deal? What was the third prophecy? Do you know what it was? He said, I know what it was. It was the fall of the church, and that's why they did not release it. So if you look at what's being talked about today with the involvement of Rome and the Vatican and possibly involved, and it looks like it was if you read the documents with our election fraud,
yeah.
Take a look at it. You know, I'm not saying it's one way or another. I'm just saying do your own work, do your own investigation. But it seemed to line up quite well with what
mm-hmm.
Andrea told me. So.
Well, there was an old TV show called Who Do You Trust?
Yeah,
how apropos right. for today.
Well, I wish Andrea was with us because he really had the discernment. He could really look through things and just come to the bottom line and really miss that man. He was an absolute delight, and it's unfortunate he passed away. But anyways, just wanted to share that story with you about what he told me about the third prophecy. So tonight, again, we are talking about some of our favorite things in the world, cryptids, reptilians, UFOs, secret government technologies. Now, who is John Rhodes? Well, he's the crypto hunter. He is one of America's most outspoken and controversial UFO researchers. We like that. He is known around the world for his pioneering work, researching reports of reptilian humanoid, reptoid contacts, and his out-of-the-box perspective regarding UFOs, alien encounters, the Hollow Earth, secret government technologies, and subsurface facilities. So John has been a featured speaker at national and international UFO conferences, and his research discoveries have served as platforms for the beliefs of many other notable UFO conspiracies, speakers, and authors. And he's also a professional consultant for literary and broadcast industry projects dealing with UFO-related subjects, and we are honored to have him with us tonight. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Patricia. I have looked forward to it.
Ah, well, we're so happy to have you here, and I know PK is happy to have you here. We've been talking about you all day.
Definitely. Most definitely, John.
So let's start with how you got involved with this, because it's a very specialized aspect of this topic. How did you get started with this, John?
Well, since I was a kid, I've always liked to open the back of the magazines and see those little illustrations which say which image is different, where is something hidden, and connect the dots. I think it all kinds of starts there, as well as when I first went to kindergarten and I happened to see the bunny for Easter in his full six-foot form take off his head to be revealed to be the kindergarten teacher, and I was running down the hallway to tell all the other kids because I had to expose and one terrified mother managed to tackle me to the ground before I made it to where all the other children were, and it kind of explained it to me that sometimes things are said that you don't want to talk about, and
right
because other people believe in things. And that, along with the fact that I just love to look in nature and identify patterns, I've always had that as a kind of a skill set since I was a kid. Years ago, I was listening to UFO researchers and people at a meeting. I thought it would be something interesting to attend. I had nothing to do that day, and I thought, what an eclectic group of people to make contact with and talk to. And in discussing things with them, it was revealed to me that there were a majority of reports saying that there were some small gray-like aliens that people were saying that they had sighted or had contact with or had dreams of, quote-unquote. And then there were only one or two individuals that I had met that had said something that didn't quite sound right, and it didn't click with everybody else. They reported seeing something that was humanoid in form, yet had reptilian physiology to it.
Mm-hmm.
And my interest in science precluded me from immediately thinking that, you know, anything like this could be real, except for the fact when you start looking at where scientists said the dinosaurs' shape and form would have evolved into if they had not been killed millions of years ago. It was the shape of a man with reptilian features and, of course, differences that you could tell, like much larger shoulder widths, very strong. They had no hair, scales instead of skin, which were thicker and larger near their chest areas and near areas that required more flexibility in the face and fingers. The scales were very small. And these beings were interacting with people. And then when I looked back historically at what humans had reported seeing and having contact with, we had to look back into the words gods. And then you looked at that wealth of symbolism that people have spoken about quite vastly on the internet and such since I first started reporting this. The forms seem to fit that which we've seen historically, even in the Bible and other earlier works that have influenced religions to this very day.
And haven't we seen depictions of these reptilians in Egypt, ancient Egypt writings as well?
Yes, we do. But you have to remember, a lot of symbolism born through that have survived historically as art and imagery is born of belief systems that lead back to serpents. And their reasons for influencing human thinking is perhaps that which we have in our own brain, the reptilian complex, which Paul McLean, a neuroanatomist back in the 1960s, said was the most ancient part of the human brain that we owe to our reptilian evolution, because prior to mammals, we were all on this planet reptiles and rooted back in that DNA, just like you know, everybody wants to know their ancestry, and we can feel feelings perhaps of prior lifetimes that even our ancestors had through DNA, and we don't explain it, but it's there mystically. Certain Beethovens playing pianos when they're three or four, perhaps that imagery has been awoken within earlier generations because of use of drugs, hallucinogenics, that open up the dream time so that you have your dreams and you see these connections leading back historically through your DNA way, way back in time. So when we see this imagery come down historically, we have to recognize that it's there inside us, but also could it be that some of these creatures, which Dale Russell, the paleontologist I was telling you about, that determined that it would reach human form eventually, could some of these actually be records of true encounters? And when I started speaking about this years ago, doing lectures across the United States, people started taking interest in authors such as a gentleman from England had extrapolated upon my research and, of course, built a wealth of people or a large population. I think I somewhere between 5 and 10% of the American population, somewhere in there, believe that some aliens here have reptilian form. So,
well, haven't they been spotted?
Where we are.
I know people have talked about running into them, even in the national parks, that they have bases here, and they've seen them, and some of them have things to report that are quite unsettling about some of the reptilian race.
Right. You know, I always tell people, be careful of your interpretations of if they're good or not, because, you know, not all humans being encountered, I hope, by aliens, we would think reflect well on humanity.
That'd be terrible.
So, you know, we can,
yeah.
Why? I mean, you know, all these guys, most early now, of course, you know, we're talking about the early 1990s when I started, you know, researching this and doing and giving the lectures. Now, there's so many people on the internet, it's hard to determine which cases are real or not, because there's a lot of imagination going on. And it's not a bad thing. It's a natural evolution of information evolution. And that's
so,
how,
so
information evolves.
What's your take on this? I know we're probably talking about more than one type of reptilian race. Yes?
Right, right. Yes. But we're talking about something that if we were to one day encounter, could it possibly claim Earth as its original habitation point as just as much as humans? In other words, are they extraterrestrial or are they terrestrials? And if they've been here for how many generations? Well, how many generations of visitors have to stay here on a base before you call them Earthlings?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you know, do
exactly.
they have rights? Do they have rights? Mm-hmm. Are they living in certain territories? To what depth? You know, do they have representation? And I think that this year, and we will find out later on, this year, 2020, is one of which has brought upon an American revolution, the sorts of which we haven't seen since the country was first formed.
That's true.
And appears that we might be leading to some sort of announcement by the government that there are extraterrestrials, but if they fit the serpentine form, you know, you've got a huge reaction amongst some people who are not as educated as we are to that form, and most of them in the United States are Christians. And so this has been a form that they have always been taught something to be feared.
Mm-hmm.
That Jesus was
That's
as wise
true,
as a serpent
John.
And as gentle as a dove.
But yet there are good reptilian races, apparently.
Right.
Right?
Right. There are good reptilians, bad reptilians, just like there's good humans and bad humans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why should it be any different? Why should we be so unique where we're the only ones with some form of duality like that? Seems that's actually there in nature. We see it. They're good animals.
Mm-hmm.
There are some that just aren't, you don't want to be around because they're vicious.
That's true. Yes. Well, we ran into a friendly reptilian we called the Commander about 4 or 5 years ago. I have to send you a picture. And he was wonderful. I mean, he was very concerned for our welfare. He gave us messages that were of import that actually bore out to be true. But I could see where if somebody just looked at him, it might trigger them into some kind of fright. We weren't afraid of him because we felt the good energy and we heard what he had to say and respected the power that he carried. I mean, this is not someone to be trifled with, obviously. I mean, some of these races probably have a lot of technological advancements as well as just their own advanced abilities. So anyway, so we had a good experience. But, you know, we've heard of other people, and I'm sure you have too, that have talked about scary things that have gone on with reptilians eating people and things like that. Like you said, who the heck knows if that's true or not? I don't know.
Well,
I didn't
you know,
experience
there's
it.
A lot. There has been since mid 1990s, late 1990s, a propaganda campaign going on to actually vilify the serpent form more than I've ever seen it historically.
Really?
And
how does that?
Popular
I think
culture.
We missed that. Describe that to us. How does that happen?
Well, it's because once the idea came out that there might be humanoid reptilians for real, there was such a large reaction amongst the global population that the information originally learned was shared, but twisted to fit campaign to sell the idea that reptilian humanoids are evil and we're victims to all of their doings whereas if you were an intelligent species up there, you'd be sitting back wondering, sitting on a rock, when are these humans going to take responsibility for what they've done? You know, because
Definitely.
It's not a matter of them dominating us. It's a matter of a treaty between two species. And it's not so much one might have such advanced knowledge than us or advanced sciences as indifferent.
Do we have a treaty with them?
Well, I imagine by now, yes, of course we do, but, you know, not publicly. You know, there's
right.
a real history, and then there's the history they give us. And these are two different histories. Because
what's
a lot
real
of history
one?
Has been changed and corrupted over the years.
So can you tell us something of the real history so we can get a sense of that?
Well, the real history is that the planet seems to go through evolutions of its own, in which there's great devastations brought upon the planet, either by natural climate, mostly by natural climate change, and that we've lived in a flat horizon, a little plane, which has allowed us to have constant nice weather for a longer period of time than really the historical records indicate. The ice core showed that there's so much up and down action that really human beings and anybody else out there may not never has a chance to really evolve, but these disasters happen. So that's where we get this historical stuff talking about ancient civilizations, or when the Bible says that God told us to go forth and replenish the earth, meaning it was filled before, but something happens, so go fill it again. So this cyclical disaster thing happens. And that's kind of where we're edging along to right now. And that's part of not a very popular type of outlook, because when people are running big businesses and such, they don't want you to think such short-term things like that, because you might take your money out of the bank and start actually applying it to things like we found out that we really need, which is when you're stuck at home and there's markets are shut down and stuff like that, what do? It's all about preparation. That's part of a secret part of our history. That's why the government started building underground bases, and why there's large underground probably cities or civilizations even right now existing under our very feet that are told, hey, there's a vacuum space out there, so you don't go out beyond the surface, otherwise you'd be sucked off the planet. That's enough to keep you locked underground for a long time. And I think that these civilizations are still even down there, so we're not the only ones on the planet.
No, we definitely are not. And have you had any experience directly with the reptilian race?
You know, that's kind of a weird question for me, because I seem to maybe have an idea of an encounter, and I didn't like to speak about it for many years. Yet at the same time, I admit that, you know, I've had my own encounter type of thing, but I question it because being as the person that kind of put all this together, my mind has been in that direction for so long, I don't think I'd believe anything that I see.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I've been exposed to it. My mind's been focused on it for such a long time that, you know, I would immediately think it would be influenced by what my collective thoughts are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
go ahead.
So, and be careful what you know, remember. So,
yes, our memories can be easily corrupted. And so, but let's just get down to brass tacks here, because you have so much knowledge about all of this, including the underground facilities. Are reptilians and humans existing together in any of these underground places?
Oh, I imagine they are. It's all happening. It's been happening for probably hundreds, if not thousands, of years.
And what about Antarctica? Do you have any intel on that, on what's going on down there? We've heard lots of stories about Antarctica and finding large aliens there in suspension. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, part of my early work was talking about Antarctica as the potential location of the evolution of the first intelligent alien reptilian species, only because they have found dinosaur bones down in Antarctica. And interestingly enough, in Australia, a paleontologist was digging along the cliffs and discovered a little reptilian creature, and he opened up its skull and he said, wow, here's a huge space inside the head in which you can see that the optical lobes were pressed against, and look how big it is. So he was able to determine that the reptilian species down there had adapted to the long winter months of no light by being able to see much more so than any other creatures or dinosaurs. And
wow.
When you think about that, when the Earth was hit with an asteroid that killed off the majority of the dinosaurs, then could it be that the ones that were pre-adapted to living in a dark environment, a cold environment, could they have retreated into caves? And when they did, some of the feces that they ate from the dying plants outside were probably deposited in the cave system. And could that have grown fungus on it that activated a part of their reptilian awakened state of consciousness, in which they started retreating deeper into the planet and coming out to the surface on occasion? Or could they have been deposited here by an even more ancient reptilian race from somewhere beyond the stars?
Now, I would imagine that they're quite advanced in many ways. I mean, we've heard a lot about extraterrestrials that are here and that are living here or visiting here, and they have the ability to communicate through their mind via telepathy. They also have the ability
right.
to do mind control on us, because we're not
right.
there with even knowing our own minds, let alone somebody else's. But so have you found in your research that the reptilians are advanced in those ways and more?
I think that that may be the case. There's evidence that humans were perhaps even more intelligent in the past, in the ancient past, than we are now. And I think, look at our education system, simply in our own hands, we've dumbed ourselves down. And there were more things in our brain active because there may have been even a higher oxygen content, you know, available in ancient times, because that's what melting ice and such produces. And it would be beneficial to the thinking state of brain. And we also know that there have been, I think, going back to this thing about psilocybins and different types of psychoactive substances that they used at long ago with all the tribe. And then when it became scarce, only the medicine men ate it, and then said, oh, come to me and I'll tell you about my visions of God. And that's how you started priesthoods, saying, I'm the direct
right.
link. Yet in prior times, those majority of us were in a state of consciousness that's more awakened, not something that alcohol or tobacco and all these other types of stimulants do to us, but the ones that they're finding out now, the ethnogeologists and psychiatry fields are just going to bloom as soon as they start recognizing the benefits of doing some of the self-help mind control that you can have through these substances. But a lot of it goes back to this reptilian thing. That's why it's better to pet a dinosaur and ride a dinosaur and fly on a dinosaur than fight a dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
With your mind.
Exactly.
And that's
yes.
where the church has corrupted us. They made us scared of this thing. There was a part of our subconscious that we were frightened of.
I like what you're saying about this. It's very interesting. And so the
mm-hmm.
reptilian brain, can you tell our audience a little bit about it? I mean, what does it do? We have the, you know, different aspects of our brain. That's one of them. So what does the reptilian brain do for us?
Well, it's connected with reproduction, which is sexuality. That's why ads and commercials and such use sexuality to get us to buy products, because humans think about it all the time. It's that kind of thing, along with the bonobo, of course, that's unrelated. But they're also interested in, snakes are very territorial. They have a certain area which is theirs, and that's their territory. So that's instinctual in human beings as well. So all of these things that motivate us on a very subconscious level to the point of where we don't even know, such as your breath, your respiration, your heartbeat, all of these are systems run by an ancient part of our brain that sits at the base of our brain, is called the reptilian complex. And even advertisers to this very day will look back on the reptilian brain and say, how can we write a commercial that's going to play on these insecurities? and things like that that are inherent in the human brain to make them buy our products. Mm-hmm. And so this is the motivator of sales throughout the planet, and it runs us to the point of where even in our own genetics, when you see this action of a leader standing at a podium or on the news, and they spread their fingers out, and they start doing this press-up motion, like calm down, calm down. It's like a push-up, kind of, but it's vertical. They put their hands up and down like this. This is actually
John, we're losing you a little bit. I think you need to just move the phone a little closer to your mouth so we can hear you. You keep fading out.
Sorry. These actions, such as a leader pumping his hands up and down, these are actually seen on reptiles in a cage when one of them, the most dominant, will stand on a rock and he'll do this push-up motion, and all the others will look up at him and they'll start doing the same thing. And so these parts of this reptilian brain even affect our interactions with each other socially on a subconscious level, but we don't see it. We don't recognize it. That's why it's so powerful. That's why the churches vilified it, because they wanted us to come to them for their answers, not look within ourselves for our own.
Right. They don't want us to be sovereign.
You guys resonate with this.
Yeah, I mean, this is the whole message, I think, of the revolution right now. Are we sovereign people? Are we going to be owned? Are we going to be slaves? What are we going to be at the end of the day? Who are we? So you're bringing up very timely issues here.
Great. Yeah, the outcome of everything you see going on in front of you right now is going to be absolutely excellent. Just look at it like a play. Don't believe any of it. Just look at it as entertainment. The reason you can see it as entertainment is nobody's going to jail. So
that's
what's happening
sure.
Now is American Revolution.
That could be part of the play, though.
Well, it's an American Revolution like we haven't seen in hundreds of years.
Yes, it is true. It is true. That is the case. I mean, a lot of people talked about this as a civil war. It is not. It's exactly what you're saying.
Definitely.
This is a revolutionary war.
Right, well,
yes.
Everything's breaking down. So, you know, everybody's calling for something new.
Yes, yes. Let me ask you about how the reptilians look in terms of height, because I saw on your website, PK and I were looking at your website, which is reptoids.com, and you reference several different sizes there. So give us a range of height and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine some of them are pretty strong also.
Right. You know, it's just there are small ones, just about as small as the, like, 3 to 4 foot gray creatures that have been created. I mean, they have been seen and reported over the years and have been created for television, like in Close Encounters of the Third kind of. And then at the same time, their size is to that size, and they look very much like the grays. It might even be a hybrid species. We also have those that are anywhere from 5 to 6 feet tall, but there's more of them that are actually between 7 and 8 to 8.5 feet tall. And so they look like a linebacker with really broad shoulders, and they're very strong, and their jaws are square.
What is their attitude compared to the smaller species? The bigger they are they more aggressive, or are they equally so, regardless of size?
Well, they're as far as power.
Yes.
Let me just ask you to repeat your question again. It was breaking up on my side a little bit.
Regardless of size, the 6 foot or better, and the smaller ones, as far as their abilities, are they equally so? Or are the larger more predominant in overseeing all of the reptiles?
Oh, you know, I think just like human beings, there's sometimes you need the big guy, and there's other times the other guys that are smaller are just as good. You know,
okay.
I don't think power has anything to do with it, except when you see the big ones, you know that with a single swipe they can cut you in half with their claw.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, and then the ones who seem to be in control answer to the appearance of something that looks like a six to seven foot tall being that's reptilian in form, that actually looks like it's wearing a cape at time, but when it stretches out its cape, they're actually wings. And these guys are called the Draco, and there's fewer of them. And on occasion, there will be one that's an albino, and they seem to have the dominance in any situation. So it seems like there's a caste system based on appearance. We have our own caste system based on wealth, but
Now, they have one based on appearance, and then we've also heard a lot of stories, John, about the fact that they can shapeshift. Is that true? They can make themselves look like humans.
I think that's been greatly over-exaggerated. I believe that there's a lot of people who like to vilify people in the news and other individuals, that the public individuals that they say are reptilian humanoid to generate fear. And that these guys dominate the fear of the whole situation end up dominating the whole situation because fear is what controls everybody.
Well, I heard from a musician, I can't think of his name right now, but he provided a very credible experience that he was sitting with someone in the music industry. It was an executive. It wasn't another musician. And he said this guy shapeshifted right in front of him, and he was just visibly shaken up by the whole experience years later. I don't know. I mean, that sounded like that could have happened. It looked like he was credible and that he had something happen that really terrified him because he saw something change form. So I was just wondering if that is, in fact, a possibility, if it's one of their powers that they have. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that it was reported that way.
I think that can happen. I think that they can come in a form that's not entirely physical and hard and materialized, and they can materialize out of a phase state in which they're actually walking around us, but we cannot see them because I've heard of people having contacts where the reptilian has reached down to what appeared to be a belt or some sort of button on his belt, and when he pressed it, he just simply disappeared. But prior to that, he was semi-translucent, where you could actually see the cabinet on the other side of him during the contact. So there's some that I think that can actually shapeshift in and out. The ones you see on television or people have on the internet that show their eyes looking vertical, my work in the entertainment industry, specifically in editing as well, there are times when you can put two bright lights either side of a person sitting in front of a camera, and it squeezes out the black areas that would otherwise round out the pupils. So what you'd get is this vertical-looking black slit. And we have to avoid that in camera work. And so that's a natural thing on the camera. So, of course, all of this happens. The shape-shifting, I think, is perhaps also when somebody gets a feeling inside themselves. Remember, there's children, there's eidetic memory is something that children use when they can make their little playland set come alive in their minds. And this has been well documented. And I think when we grow up into adults that we still have those times in which we can sense something, and that interior sensation will let us know there's something perhaps untrustworthy about this person, or that we feel that this person is, we're relating to them on some deeper level that's beyond and even more ancient than humans. Remember, we were reptiles before we were mammals, so we recognize each other at times like that, and not in a fearful way. So this is very confusing for people to experience.
Yeah, I would imagine it is for a number of reasons, no question about it. So you are also very familiar with other types of alien encounters, the Hollow Earth and secret government technologies that are subsurface. So what's new and interesting that you can share with us about any of those topics? We'd love to just hear new things about what's going on in this field and what you're uncovering in your research.
Well, there seems to be a continuing growth of underground spaces being opened up all around the countries, in different countries. And this is perhaps even spurred on by the pandemic, because governments are looking for a way to survive if something happens on the surface, where they can have their own population representation survive some sort of cataclysm. This is like Cheyenne Mountain shutting its doors.
Right.
And there are communities across the United States in which there are a high number of retired people from intelligence communities and aerospace and such that settle down. And one spies on the other in case somebody gets dementia. They can kind of deal with that on a national security level rather than have everybody talking. And if people are talking, they tend to talk to others with classified security clearances. So you start looking at these communities pop up around the United States. And you have to wonder, when we have all these new politicians coming in and the old ones going out, or we're actually seeing our politicians retreat to somewhere safer before something happens.
Yes. Yeah, that's kind of stinky, because they get to protect themselves and they know it's coming and we don't, and we're stuck above ground. Not very fair.
Right. Well, hey, listen, the Hopi did the same thing. You know, they said that the snake, their elderly snake brothers, came up and took some of them down with the ant people, where they stayed with the ant people, they called them. And when you hear of the Hopis talk of the ant people, these are creatures that look like the little grays, the skinny arms with big eyes and bulbous heads and stuff. That looks like an ant to me if I saw it crawl up from the underground.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that these ancient cultures, when they say that these devastations happened, they sought the refuge of the underground. But they said really only the spiritual ones actually made it, because they were listening to their inner voice of where to retreat to. And for the Hopis, it was down a hole in the ground called the Sipapuni, and this is where the Spider Woman had led their prior civilizations to the surface when they first inhabited Earth's surface, like the primordial tribes.
Gosh, so we have quite a history here with the aliens that you're discussing with us. And, you know, here's another question for you. The Greys have a big reputation for doing genetic manipulation and abducting people, taking them to their ships, and doing all kinds of things to them. What about the reptilians? Do they also have their own genetic lab going on with us as the subjects?
Oh, I'm sure they do, just like we do with some of theirs. You know, we have them as a subject too. I mean, it's just scientific pursuit. They don't think of it as good and bad and who's collecting what. They think of it as a scientific pursuit. You know, you can get a lot of scientists to justify what they're doing. It might be horrifying for the animal itself, but we still even condone it and I think it's cruelty to animals, but they still,
oh, definitely,
you
yes.
know, terrorize animals for industry here in our
horrible.
In our civilized world.
But you're saying we also do that to them. Our government, our secret government is doing this to them?
I'm sure of it. We had to have grabbed one and cut him apart and had a look inside him.
Mhm.
I mean, that would be, they would think of that as national security.
Yeah, they would
think
about
it.
Way.
They'd have
Absolutely.
To at least study one, not take the word of them. They would most likely, we're talking about the military. You know, that's not necessarily the work that we want to hear about, but I'm sure they do it, because they'd have to know what that being looked like inside out so they could develop weapons against it, or get to know what its muscle systems and where its weaknesses are and how its eyes look.
Yeah, the whole thing's quite adversarial, that's for sure. I mean, yeah,
well,
and there's no justification really on either
side,
except, again, you're saying that there's a theme running through here. It's that we're so terrified of each other that this is the kind of thing we do. So that does make, that part makes sense, definitely.
Well, for a younger civilization like us, when you're looking at more ancient civilizations, just like we go into the, you know, to some of the jungles and we have encounters with civilizations that have never even seen us before, you know, they're the ones usually more damaged. I think the Brookings Institute report back in the 1950s had said, or 60s had said, this was the key thing that would damage industry, they said. The most damaged part of industry, human industry, would be its mechanical and engineering fields, because they would suddenly come to a stop thinking, why pursue anything further when we could have the answer any minute? And then there's a loss of interest there. I think Childhood's End, Arthur C. Clarke, wrote a book about that, talking about what a dismal state of affairs when these young, older tribes who have never come out of the jungles and they meet us, advanced people, how they suffer. And so the observation of the report in the end was that we would suffer if such contact were made. But I think we're at a new time now. I think that what we're seeing now with all the information coming out and with what's happening now, right now during our second American Revolution, I call it Revolution II, that we're actually being prepared for contact, because there's going to be some sort of a consciousness jolting event that they're going to try and perhaps use in order to make us think of each other and all these countries trying to come together, instead of, oh, we're just going to take down the walls. That doesn't do much.
There's a fine line here between a one world government run by elitists and us all coming together. They're two kind of different things.
If they suddenly say there's an ancient civilization or there's others out there, the other civilizations or the advanced aliens might say, hey, we can't talk to you as separate countries. You can't even get your own act together. You know, you'd be arguing for weeks. We need one representation. And I think that's the pickle that the world found itself in many, many years ago. And that's why our secret governments first formed the, Earth Alliance, which basically, I'm just saying, it's a group of people that are governments representing all major governments that act industrially and cooperatively in shaping history and our destination with technologies. You know, they run the show.
PK and I have talked a lot about this, and especially with our predictors that have been on the show over the last 6 months. You know, it's like, what are we headed for? Now, it all sounds real nice and kumbaya. We're all going to be under, just one world government. But you have to question this a little bit, too, in terms of
Earth
who do you think is going to be
Earth
in charge.
Earth is changing. Right. Earth is changing because of climate patterns. It cannot be denied. The argument, who cares about the argument? That's just a distraction from the next question, which is, what do we do next to prepare? So this nation needs to be invigorated politically and in a community-wise in order to try and uplift people down near the lower elevations along the coast, because those areas are going to be flooded soon.
Yeah, and I know Edgar Cayce did predict that we are going to have a very different-looking coastline before too long. So, definitely the Earth's going through a lot of changes. We're going through a lot of changes. And who knows what's going to be coming out the other side. And, we've even heard predictions that there's going to be some type of an alien invasion that's hostile, which I really hope doesn't happen. That would be counterproductive.
The scary part is that I saw a program once in which Gorbachev was being interviewed on a stage with Mikhail Gorbachev, the former president of the Soviet Union, and I think it was George Shultz was there, and George Shultz and he were reminiscing about Ronald Reagan, and it was the former head of the Soviet Union, Gorbachev, said, let me tell you a story. He says, when we were in Iceland, he said, remember when we said we just want to go down to the boathouse here to talk for a moment, and we had dismissed our security. And Shultz goes, yes. And he goes, Ronald Reagan and I walked down there. And he says, Ronald Reagan asked me, he said, what would you do if the United States were attacked by an alien species? And the crowd chuckled. And he waves his hand. He goes, no, seriously. And he says, my answer to Ronald Reagan was, oh, we would mutually defend you. And Ronald Reagan's response was, oh, I was hoping that was going to be your answer.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not be just the one country that may be the target, or the whole world that may be a target, maybe just one country. You know, so we've got to think about these things. And we've got to think about how when alien life or an unknown species is visiting Earth, what exactly are their intentions? Because we don't really kind of trust our government to give us the answers. Can they give us the answer directly in some way?
And that's part of the problem, I think, with all of this, is that we don't have the information. So either the government has it, or the shadow government has it, or somebody has it somewhere. We don't have access to it. We have our own experiences, and we can live with that. You have your research. However, there hasn't been any cooperation, really, between us as the population on the planet and the people that do have access to the technologies that I think could help clean up the planet, could help create better health care. You know, all of that's been hidden from us. It's not because that's what we wanted. We wanted that out in the open for forever. But the government has their way of handling this, and it's not open.
Well, I've seen myself over the Sierra Mountains of California one night. The horses were going kind of crazy. I heard the dogs go in and out of the house, and I walked outside and I looked up. I couldn't see any stars, and I was thinking, what are they getting all excited about? And it was at that point I looked up, and I could see the stars were being revealed as if a black curtain was being pulled over my head. And way up in the sky, I saw this large triangular object. It had to be the size of perhaps one or two aircraft carriers. And it was a triangle shape.
That's enormous.
And I could see it had three engines on the back, and right up on the skin of it, it seemed to have indentations that would otherwise indicate that that might be some sort of a ladder built into the skin in case they had to set down somewhere so somebody can get up to the top or something. And I thought to myself, God, I suddenly felt, first of all, I felt patriotic. I was thinking, only in America, you know, this has got to belong to us. All right, you know, because I couldn't imagine. I think the aliens had been doing something quite different in my mind anyway. So, and then I realized at that point that, hey, if we have this kind of technology that can act as like cargo containers working secret operations all around the United States, then why can't we apply this to medical stuff? Why can't we have the ambulances that will go fly to people and lift them out all of a sudden? Where is all this anti-gravity technology where we could do away with oil polluting products and dependencies on oils? In other words, these technologies and these things could change the planet, but it's a matter of the people in control. Are they willing to give it to us or not?
That's been the question, and obviously they have not been. And part of the reason, if not the whole thing, is greed. And the economy would fail, is what they say. But would it? I mean, I think there are ways to create a whole different level of balance with all of this. And it's just so frustrating for all of us who know that all of this is very, very real, that there are a number of species here from other planets. There are multidimensional beings here. There's just a whole host of things. And it would be nice if we could speak with people who have this knowledge and have locked these files away and get some of this out here. I mean, the CIA apparently just released more files. However, they're highly redacted. So what are you supposed to do with this? You have to infer what the heck they're talking about. Again, it's really not helpful. It's like, what are you doing? Why don't you just give us the unredacted file? So for so long, you were so big on telling us none of this was real, we were all nuts. Now they're letting it out piece by piece.
Dead. Yeah, usually they want to wait until everybody's dead that was involved, and then they'll open up files because they don't want to hold anybody responsible.
Yeah, maybe that's it too. Yeah, they got a lot of splaining to do. They sure do.
Yeah,
and it's the whole thing to me strikes me as very, very unfair. When there is so much to be learned, there are those special people that are contacted by extraterrestrials or multidimensionals or whatever, and some of them have really profound experiences that they go on to share with the rest of us. It just seems like the whole thing is being very limited.
It's going to be a matter of time. before UFOs show up over Washington, D.C. again. And when you finally see what they're going through now and they abandon the city and they want to move their capital, get ready to move to Denver.
Why Denver?
Wow. Denver is the middle of the United States, more or less geographically. It's with at least by rail lines, and that's when it was first thought of to be a backup U.S. capital.
I never thought of
that. Yeah, invest in real estate, ladies.
I'll be darned.
Huh. So you think that that's a possibility to change the capital? Why?
Well, there was, you know, during World War II, they started thinking, God, you know, if the Germans come over here and they've only got a short hop as far as if they hit England and take over, then we got to get another capital that's further inland because it's too close to the waterways where submarines can come up. It's too close to the ocean for invasion. So we got to move it inland. And so there were a lot of states that vied for, you know, being the ones that did it. And I'm just saying that I've got my bets on Denver.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's where Colorado NORAD is. It's where the Air Force, I think Air Force Academy is.
Right.
I think they just moved to one of the departments. Of
certainly
Navy
got a lot more
land
there
Bureau
than
of Land
you do.
Management, I think, got moved there. Western Division. They have more federal offices in Denver. Right now, they have more federal offices in Denver right now than most other states do outside the capital. Existing capital back in Washington.
Okay, so we have to buy our property there next. All right.
Oh, yeah.
That's my next
investment.
It's a
beautiful place.
Yeah.
It's Mile High City.
Colorado's gorgeous.
Of course, I say that in more than one way, you know. It's where they had Proposition 64 pass, you know. Mile High City.
There you go. So what are your thoughts then, John, on disclosure? You seem to think that there will be something happening around this soon.
Well, I've always been a little concerned about the potential for people to use the fear of the reptilian image to try and say it has to do with the apocalypse, you know, and kind of generate a lot of religious fever that direction in order to propel us into, you know, kind of defending ourselves or creating an armada that might protect us from something coming here. You know, it's very much like, you know, much like the movies, you know, but not so much unlike my mother when she was young, went down when the war started, World War II, and she was one of those, you know, Rosie the Riveters, you know, riveting bolts into B-17 bombers and stuff. And these gals did it patriotically. You know, the people will suddenly change. Stop thinking about all of this horror going around them if they suddenly get focused on one thing.
Yeah,
and
I think
usually
that's a possibility.
The fear of a battle would do that.
Mm-hmm. That usually does it. But again, I also can appreciate what you're saying, that you don't want to see the reptilian race demonized in the process of this either and seen as an enemy.
Oh,
but it may not
be held accountable. Why? Everybody should be held accountable equally. You know, we shouldn't demonize them because, you know, there's things they can justify, just as our government can justify some of the really horrible things they've done. You know, so.
And they do.
Well, they do. Every group is going to do that. Every animal group is going to say, hey, we had a reason for doing this. You just don't see it right now.
There's so many different races of extraterrestrials here. I mean, we just had Craig Campobasso on the show last week with his book talking about the different races, and there's a variety. It's quite fascinating how many are here right now.
Yeah, you know, from my research, it looks like maybe originally this was a planet dominated by the reptilians.
Mm-hmm.
And that many years ago, there was a battle that destroyed the atmosphere of Mars, and that the remnants of the Martian civilization that were more human-looking came here in small representations to this planet. And they were allowed here as refugees, but they were used to a slave race back on Mars. When they came here, they looked at some little monkey guys, and they looked at some of the reptilian stuff, and they genetically created themselves humans and to do the slave work. And then some reptilians that were here didn't like that because they once sat down underneath a tree and ate a magic mushroom with a human couple, and they started to go out talking by a fireside or something, and the human got awoken, and no longer was it just this stupid slave. It questioned its orders. And for some sort of a dominant male god came down, the one of the Old Testament, and said, hey, you guys shouldn't have done that. I told you, don't hang out with each other. Remember, the real Jewish traditions and their more ancient Haggadah texts speak of the reptilian or the serpent in the Garden of Eden as having two legs upon which it stood with two arms and was as tall as a camel. And at one time actually chased Adam through the woods or the jungle.
Well, that certainly sounds like the reptoids that you've described.
Right, exactly.
What's their lifespan also? Is it long?
No, I don't know. That's a great question.
Yeah, I mean, I would think it would probably be longer than ours. I don't know why I think that, but I do.
I would imagine it would. You know, but also we got to think about the antiquity of some of the human gods that we've been reported. Remember, I was talking to you about Mars and how these more human types came down here. There's supposedly ancient man that actually had a longer lifespan than we can possibly imagine, like back in the times of Noah. And so that's reported. And then with the reptilians, we've got some turtles that are hundreds of years old, as far as I can remember. So some of the ancient reptile species can live, or some of the reptile species can be quite old. And when they set up shop here, you know, these Marsmen guys kind of used the image of the dove, but they were warriors. They built up a warring community on the planet, on the surface, and the serpent people were made to go underground, and they were told not to come up until they say God returns. And at that time, you know, we'll be judged. So a lot of people feel that these are the kind of times we're looking forward to, but not in the terms of gods, but in aliens and their battles over us.
Well, this will be interesting to see. I mean, I know we've all been wanting more from the government in terms of releasing the information that they have, but whether or not that's ever going to happen, I don't know. I don't see it's to their advantage to release it. Maybe to the advantage of the aliens to release it. So we'll just have to sit back and, again,
well, you know,
get the popcorn.
Right, you know, will there be a day in which everybody looks up in the sky and no matter where they're living, they're going to see crafts so large that are thousands of miles wide that they can look up and see the craft so it's no longer a secret anymore?
Wouldn't
you
that
know,
be
there's,
great?
There's a,
that would be nice,
well,
wouldn't
right.
it?
Nobody can deny it after that. Everybody walk out.
We're in favor of it. We really are and see it as a benefit. Now,
I think so too, you know.
Let me ask you this about
personal. We need to have
personal,
hope in some way.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Star Trek gave us hope way back when.
Right.
With reptilians, I had a question here for you about. And I just lost my train of thought. But there was a question there. See if it comes back to me about reptilians. I need my special light that stimulates my brain.
You know, here's another thing. While remembering your question, I'll just throw something in here, which is a subject I don't talk about too often, but it's something that should be spoken of because it's kind of cool, which is that, you know, you think of these women who have reported sexual encounters with reptilian humanoids. And this
yes,
isn't some of the real...
That.
Right. And I think that a lot of this... is stimulated because what these women are having are actual internalized kundalini action that results in a female reaching orgasm at the time of embracing the symbol of the serpent. And because the motions of the energies entwining the spine from the base up, which is the genital area up through the back and up your spine towards your brain, can be perceived as two serpents, twined serpents, duality energy, chasing each other or following each other around the spine until it reaches the base of your brain. And when this happens, there's a buildup of energy that exists. And because of the stimulation of the lower chakra in the red region down in the lower parts of your body, this brings about a reptilian image at the same time as when there's the result of having an orgasm. And so these things happen, and at the same time you hear women talking about something was here, had a reptilian form, and it wasn't pleasant, and it felt intrusive. And I think that just as our soldiers may have mishandled people through the times when we've had wars, what they've done to female women, I mean, through the years, that it, actually some of these soldiers that come down with these scientists, they might too also get grabby, and they might do things in which aren't even allowed by their superiors, and that can bring on very traumatizing experiences.
Yeah, no, so and it could very well be a Kundalini experience. That makes a lot of sense. It could be.
Yeah, and
but,
that's
why
I thought
of my question. Okay, I've got my question here.
That.
Let me ask
before I
forget it again.
Go
have
for
you
it.
Interviewed any other people who have had experiences with reptilians, and I'm not talking about the sexual ones, but I'm talking about just an experience with a reptilian, either aboard a craft or in their underground habitat? I mean, have you talked to anybody who can give you some information about what that's like?
I'll recall the case of a friend of mine who recently passed. His name was Tal, and he was the person that sometimes you'll see these underground tunnel maps with underground bases on it, and it's in color, and it says the word Tal on it, decoratively drawn. He was the researcher who came up with the map and put that on the internet. During the 1980s, he was in Santa Fe at his house, and one night he woke up. And when he looked to the foot of his bed, he said there was a 6 to 7 foot tall reptilian humanoid was translucent. I could see my cabinet on the other side of him. I picked up an object and threw it because I thought, oh my God, I'm having a vision. What do I do? I'll just throw this at it and make it go away. And it went through him. And he didn't have any kind of a response. Nothing in its eyes or anything responded. It was just emotionless. And then he said that it turned around from him and then looked at a map on his wall, and he could see this map that had been being compiled with string and pins connecting potential underground bases, and that's how he made the map. And then it looked back at him, and he says there was he says it was really strange. He said everything in my mind kind of went I looked at him, and out of his forehead I could see something glowing. What is that? And he says, and all of a sudden it got bigger. And I didn't realize it, but was actually, it was like a geometric, different colors of geometry fixed together and spinning and changing shapes. And it was moving towards, it was getting bigger. And it was then he realized it was moving towards him, because he said he stepped aside and looked at it, and he could see this thing projecting from his head a little bit. And he says it came towards his head. And as soon as it reached his head, his mind more or less blacked out. And when he woke up, he said the thing was still there, so he couldn't have been out for long. And he said it turned and looked away, and then down the hallway, and then it reached down to its belt and pressed a button, and then simply dissolved beyond his ability to see it anymore. Now, there was other eyewitnesses that I've spoken to that were actually a couple that were sleeping in the living room of his place, and they were sleeping in sleeping bags on the floor. And the woman told me she saw something come out of his room after she had blood taken from her in the living room. And she said there were three. There's one like just stood there watching guard and watching everything, and the other two were taking action. And they said the next morning they could actually see footprints that were large in the carpeting, indented right into the pad, like something heavy had sat down, like a piece of furniture, you know. And since that time, shortly after that, he said he was infused with the interest of optics and optical fibers and fiber optics and lasers. And he said he didn't even have the background knowledge, but he went down to a school and said, hey, I'd like to get in your class for fiber optics, because I'd like to be one of these guys at a concert, you know, that does the fiber optics stuff and uses lasers and stuff. So they said, well, you can't, you don't really have a background in it. And our class starts just day after tomorrow. And he says, just give me the test. The guy said, look, if you can pass the test, I'll give you another class. So he took the test. He aced the test. Background knowledge in it. And it was at that point it really struck him that something was wrong. It was like he felt like he was infused with knowledge he shouldn't rightfully have, and that something's trying to guide him down a path of potentially getting into a job with government work and military work using lasers and stuff like that. Who knows? And so he felt like he was being used, and he didn't like it because he felt the goal of it was intrusive and manipulative. And so he didn't care for the encounter. In addition to that, I forgot to tell you, when he was trying to make it go away before he threw the object, he said he did the closing of the circle hand sign in front of him like a magician makes at the end of the ceremony to tell the creature to get out of the sacred space. That
right,
didn't work
so
either.
It was like a banishment. Mm-hmm.
Right, like a banishment, and then didn't work either. So for him, the whole thing was just negative and intrusive.
That's too bad,
especially
because it sounds... I don't know. I mean, it sounds to me like he was given a gift of knowledge and information, and he just decided to throw it away.
Well, you know, I think that in the end he may have used it for other purposes, you know, but I think it was more or less he never liked any – it was the kind of a person that never liked anybody telling them what to do.
Okay.
So it was this kind of attitude of his.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if it's wanting me to do it, I'm not going to do it. I'll do things of my own volition, not just something done to me in the middle of the night without my, you know, my approval or my knowledge of it. That's kind of wrong. Something should come to me and say, hey, how about doing this? And I might say, yeah, put it on me.
Well, what we've heard is that they can't do it without your permission, but they may attain it on, you know, another level, like through a dreaming mind experience. So people don't even realize
they're
giving permission.
Or even a childhood agreement. You know, when children are entertaining fairies and things that they don't know are real or not, and if they see aliens, we've heard reports of this, kids are not threatened by them.
Right.
These guys said, hey, can I take you somewhere and show you or do some things to you, and it's good. And they'll go, oh, okay. And for them, that's a lifetime contract. They just
mm-hmm.
signed, you know, because you said, oh, okay. But my God,
right.
they may not recognize it's just a child saying, I'll go with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no difference. There's no age that is required in giving permission. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, we're ageless.
You don't think of the contracts being lifetime either.
Well, it might be multiple lifetime. I think that the real alien species, I think that the reptilians are way beyond science at this point. I think they're actually pursuing where we go after we die and things like that. I mean, you know, the super paranormal stuff. Not just a matter of how fast can you get there and what can you, because when you've achieved everything in an advanced species, where else can you go except inwards next? And really, death is the next doorway. I wouldn't be surprised if aliens make contact with us, and guess what? They've already made contact with the area where we go when we die. They have a telephone set up.
Yeah. What do they think
you
of these reptoids, John? What do they think of people?
Well, we're violent.
Yes,
than us. The propaganda campaign, making us afraid of them, is a propaganda campaign that works to their benefit, for sure. But we're inherently just a bunch of violent animals because we've been bred to be that way. Most of the world's economies are based on war and death. You know, we're an aggressive species. We still eat animals when there's other substitutes. Why continue animal cruelty? It should end. I hope that's what Arthur C. Clarke said. He said, when the aliens land... And by the way, Arthur C. Clarke in Childhood's End, he described the aliens saying they looked akin to the devil as classically described. Well, you can imagine what that is. With a forked tail, he said. Right. And he doesn't expand more than that. You know, and he said when that day comes, he says it's Childhood's End. It's the end of our kind of age of innocence. And it's when we come to full awakening. And I think we're on the crest of that now.
Wow. This is an exciting time to be alive, as frustrating and stressful as it can be.
Unbelievable. And we're favored because we have food on our tables for now. We have toilet paper on the shelves for now. We have,
the moment.
You know, right. And you look at the rest of the world, it's filled with suffering.
Well,
you know, could it be that the people that run the planet have long been convinced themselves there's going to be a point in time in which we're going to turn the tides and we don't care who's in control because we're going to make it a better place. And it's not going to be without the painful episodes, you know, during like American revolutions and such. Just think of it like a woman having a baby. She screams her husband's name. Damn you, you did this to me. All this screaming, it's horrible. But then out of that comes this beautiful baby. And I think we're just about there.
Mm-hmm.
So have faith, sit back, don't get stressed out, and watch the entertainment.
Yes, we are watching. We're watching it closely. So it's nice to be able to talk about these types of things. Now, with the reptilians, are there any special ships that are affiliated with this reptoid race? I know there's a whole bunch of UFOs out there. They all look different. Any that are affiliated with the reptoids?
I'm not exactly sure. There's all these reports through the years that, of course, are a mix of real reports and made-up reports, and it's hard to delineate which because everybody's intentions are okay, you know. But I think that some of the ones that appear as saucers may actually be something from our planet and also a technology that we've also adapted since the Avrocar and those guys, you know, the later World War II efforts that went dark. But the saucers seem to be the classic ones associated with the reptilian humanoids. And also saucers that on the bottoms of them, it's like a tile work that's actually pixels of a screen. And they can show you anything under the entire body of the craft, including video.
Wow.
It's like you're looking at a TV
screen. So they can also cloak their ships.
They can cloak their, well, it's this plasma, like a plasma screen. They can cloak their ships, you know, just by, you know, seeing what's on top. So you have an eye on top or you have, you know, a two-way tunnel between one side and the other, and it just reflects what it sees. So, you know, but they're coming up with that technologies more and more. I had a friend, that friend of that I had whose name was Tal, his father worked with the government, you know, designing and building things, and he was exposed to what appeared to be a high-definition TV that was 3D color, and it used no glasses. And he saw this back in the early 1960s. And before he died, he said, can you imagine, even though I'm about to die, they still haven't brought that out to the public. You still need those stupid glasses.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Well, John, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left, and I do want to ask you about other types of cryptids. Because I'm not sure what other ones you may have investigated or know about, like Mothman, Bigfoot, Dogman, any of those that you have run into or found out about?
Well, just general knowledge, you know. I believe that there's a hominid species resembling Bigfoot that exists on the planet. Just as there are reptoids, there are also hairy hominids that are from the interior of our planet. You know, everything sought shelter underground. And I think that's a fascinating. Remember, we've tried to say that, you know, even though there is very few large mammals discovered, overall, we've only discovered about what's estimated to be about 15% of all life on the planet. That means that 85% of other life forms that they think exist out there, we haven't even seen to take a picture of or write anything about in a book.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's where we have the world of imagination is open. We have 85% of lives that we haven't even made contact with. Could there be other life forms out there? Could there be an insectoid that reached intelligence? Could there be a dinosaur that reached intelligence? Could there be an ant of some sort of ant form that reached intelligence? I mean, is this a natural thing that occurs within animal species eventually in a small group of them break away to be called what we call now aliens? Could past civilizations who have been wiped off the off the surface of the earth, could their representatives underground have come into contact with deeper cultures and themselves acquired, you know, UFO objects to fly around the earth and watch what's going on while not trying to be perceived? You know, they may be ancestors of ours that we now call aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Live in a fishbowl.
Yes. Yeah. What about Mothman? Do you know anything about Mothman?
I do. You know, to me, when I first heard Mothman, I got the feeling that it was a Draco being flying with his wings, and then he was lowering his head, looking down, and that might appear like his red glowing eyes, which they've been known to have, could have been appearing like they were in his chest when he was just looking down at them from a height. And when the bridge crashed out there and all those people died, it was drawn to that location as if a portal was opened up, because when a person dies in a house, you know, there's a portal that opens up that has to heal itself between our two worlds. And during that time, things can pop in and pop out. And I think that with an event that was going to occur, like the bridge collapsing, just like 9/11, there were people who sensed something catastrophic had happened, but nothing had. And I think that the adrenaline running through people's minds or beings' minds when a large cataclysm happens is so terrifying that itself it drives the psychic power up and it pumps that imagery back in time. So that in the past they can see that something's actually coming, but it was actually projected by the victims. And with as many people that died out there with the bridge collapse, that opening allowed that Draco to move back and forth and interact, and of course with the local community. And over time, it heals shut. So, like in Ghostbusters, send it back to the portal. You know.
Oh my goodness! Well, Mothman's one of our favorites, and it's been an interesting story for a lot of reasons, but one in particular, there's never, in my opinion, and at least my own research on this, nobody's ever been hurt by Mothman. And there's been a lot of speculation, did Mothman cause the bridge collapse? But that doesn't seem to add up, especially since they did find a structural issue that had long gone unattended. So it's just an interesting creature, and from where,
and
we don't know.
He could have been living around there, and the bridge itself might have been letting out high-frequency, you know, pitches because it was snapping and getting ready to break that only he could hear, like a dog hearing a whistle, and it annoyed him, and he came out and looked around. You know, it could have been anything.
Yeah, that's quite possible.
Yeah.
That's a good theory. Yes, quite possible. Indeed. Now, John,
I'd be out looking around if I couldn't get any sleep.
Yeah, right. What's
definitely
causing this?
Definitely.
Oh, would it please stop? Yes, yes, exactly. Now, John, if people have stories of their own encounters, would you like them to contact you via your website?
Oh, they can send an email through the website, and you're more than welcome. It hasn't changed in many years, the website. I'll be going through some changes soon in the upcoming months, bringing out some fresh, brand new stuff that's unrelated to this, but something just as remarkable. I hopefully will have everybody in the world talking.
Gosh, well then you got to come back on our show.
Oh sure, at some point in time, absolutely.
Yeah, when you get that up and running, make sure to let us know. We'd love to have you back. That would be nice to hear about something brand new and to get everybody talking. That would be great.
And thank you so much for your time tonight and allowing me to speak out to all your audience.
We've enjoyed having you so much.
Yes,
excellent.
You have such a unique perspective on everything, John, and it's great. It's really been great hearing from you this evening. So thanks again.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody. We will be back with another great show. We have Jeff Harmon coming in. He's going to talk about what's next, and also we're going to take a look at a chart he did on Jeffrey Epstein. It's going to be a real exciting show. It's just, it never stops here at Supernatural Girls. So, anyways, everybody, until next week, we'll see you on the Blue Highway. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Hello.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for another radio adventure with Supernatural.